You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. This is a lower leagues podcast and I am not Craig G. Telfer. My name is Doug McKay and I'm joined by Sean McGuinn.
Hello there. Sean what?
I know. I got halfway through not committing to saying the second name and I was like, no, you've started it, so I'm going to have to carry on. And Craig Anderson, who I managed to say his name as it should be announced.
Yes, a notable War League expert as well. We've got here to talk through the... I watch my team in it for 1 year and I'll probably be watching them for another one next year.
That's what I was thinking. So both of you have experience of watching your teams in the lower leagues. I think if anybody... has a concern about potentially watching your team in the lower leagues again next season, with Craig Anderson. But you must have been watching these games, Craig, and thinking, please, please, I cannot possibly go through this experience again.
What I watch, every single time I watch a League One game, I go, do you know what, that seems like quite a good league. Like, everyone seems quite interested. And every time I watch a Championship game, I'm like, fuck, no, not that again. Like, I don't know. I've said that a few times. It was because we were pretty... dull last season, yeah, not compared to the swashbuckling style we've got this season, but the games, it wasn't like, even though we won the league and we won 20 games unbelievably when I was looking at the league table, it didn't feel like that. It felt like every game was like a 1-1 draw, and I'm just imagining those 1-1 draws at Capello all over again.
lower league football isn't good, but it is a good laugh. That's why I look upon it. I don't take it too seriously.
Well, as In place of Craigie Headhelfer, I was going to say when the Alvin, Simon and Theodore get together, but that didn't even work. And then my original one was trying to name the three members of Eternal, but I forgot who they were aside from Louise Redknapp. So that doesn't even work. So I can see.
I mean, you could have googled it
quite a while, but
it's a genuine quiz. He's cheating, otherwise.
I mean, not off the top of my head. That's what I hadn't come up with something. Anyway, so we're going to talk about three games. I'm going to start in League Two with what was arguably the game of the weekend in League Two. Annan Athletic hosted Stirling Albion. It was a 2-2 draw. Blair Curry being sent off after 14 minutes for Stirling Albion, which made it a bit more difficult for them. And Annan took to a 2-0 lead by half time before Stirling Albion getting back into this. Sean, does this sort of confirm, even be 10 man Stirling, that they're on their way to League One next season, or at least the playoffs?
Myself and Taylor spoke last week about the Airdrie Dunfermline game, that sometimes there are momentous weekends, for maybe want of a less grandiose name, where a team does something that just says, right, this is it. They are going to end up winning the league. To be fair, within 2 days of us talking about Dunfermline's statement, they Falkirk gained 2 points on them, so it probably doesn't mean anything. I only saw the kind of bare bones of this on Saturday, it was only when I really watched it, but obviously when I watched the highlights that I got to kind of focus on it a bit more. I presumed, looking at it, that Stirling Albion had obviously got their goalkeeper sent off after 15 minutes, then went 2-0 down. Then I presumed that the second half they'd maybe dominated Annan for a bit, or maybe could have won the game, and that would have really laid down a marker and to get a goalkeeper sent off after 15 minutes and then still gain points on Dumbarton, which is literally what they did, absolutely makes a statement. However, once I watched the highlights, I felt like they kind of got away with them. Like, yes, it's still good in terms of they gained points on Dumbarton. However, I didn't feel at any point that they were on top in the game. That both our goals came in, I think, 63rd and 65th minute, both brilliant goals. But I kind of felt they were a wee bit fortunate. That's not to say that they can't win the league. And although I don't have a horse in the race, I do think Stirling Albion are a far better team to watch than Dumbarton, who kind of grind out results. But I thought Stirling were a wee bit lucky to get away with it. But that's, you know, something that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, for me it was like, every time I see a game like that where it's like two absolute wonder goals in the space of like, because it is like, I mean, for League 2 level, they're particularly excellent goals. And it reminds me of, you know, the Scotland under 21 game where Chris Maguire scored from, and this came up on the podcast recently, New Air United signing, Chris Maguire scored from basically the halfway line. But Iceland's two goals in that game, I don't think I've ever seen. I think it was perhaps the no longer talked about Gylfi Sigurdsson, who scored both of them, but they were like...
Yeah, I think we're not allowed to mention him for reasons that are redacted.
Yes, but we're allowed to say that he scored some goals. Well, But he's absolute rockets from like 40 yards, both of his goals. And I think the same is true in the first leg of the tie. And it's sometimes like that. It's like you wonder, as a team like Annan Athletic, you've worked your way 2-0 up. You're playing against 10 men, and then that happens, and you're just like, we've just not got a chance here. Like, you're just completely... I don't think you can really criticise them for any particular bad play. It's not like you can go away for that game and be, like, absolutely raging at how you've... I mean, they had a couple of chances that they could probably have sealed it, you know, before those goals. But aside from that, it's not like they're going to come away kind of critical of their defending or anything of the sort. It's just two absolute stoters.
I thought, but before we even get to the game, I've spoken about Annan's commentators on this on this show before. I really like them. Honestly, I really like them. They are essentially the same as the Stranraer commentators, but without the myopia.
Myopia, is that a word? They're less. Because remember watching stuff they did earlier in the season, they were less miserable as well. Which,
yes,
you know,
they're
just happier generally. Maybe that's the difference between Stirling and Stranraer and Annan more generally. That there's just
what I would say is though, I presume this was just and maybe it is. I don't know, but I thought it was a live package that goes out on to viewers abroad. Then they cut it up for a highlights package, but there's a line just as the teams are coming out, and it goes, a big welcome to people who are watching the highlights from fans of Annan Athletic and Stirling Albion. And I was like, right, well, have they added that in afterwards, or is that just a line that they've put in at this point so that it makes it easier to edit for the highlights? But then about 5 seconds later, it sounds like the co-commentator coughs up all of his internal organs. So I'm like, right, like, why have you included that part? And I thought, well, maybe they're in a hurry to get the highlights out. But if you're pressed for time and you'll have enough time to either add in a line about hello and welcome to the highlights for fans of and so on and so forth, or edit out the death of the co-commentator, I would have done the latter. It just felt like a strange... Regardless, I like what they do, but it was I thought it was odd.
As for me, I don't watch a lot of League 2 highlights. I catch the Championship one sometimes, but it's just like the variety of length of these highlights. It's like some of these guys at the Air United Partick Thistle one, it's got
13 minutes.
We're going to talk about 13-minute package.
13.
The game did not merit a 13-minute package. I think the Annan one's like 9 minutes, but at least the first minute of that is just that kind of, you know, team lineups and players walking out onto the pitch and all the rest of it.
Context setting.
And people keeling over.
Some of the choices of incident that they chose to put in, you're just like, well, it's like a mishit cross. And it's like, I have been to many lower league games, and yes, there are quality issues, but you still get incident. And some of that incident could maybe have been better packaged in each of the three examples, I believe. But nonetheless, I think it was, I've watched the Annan ones quite a few times. It feels like every time I do lower league on this podcast, we're talking about Annan, and the angle's nice. I like that angle, and yeah, why not?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Alright, so good. Like, I think Annan generally is a good place to go and watch football, and then they're also benefited by having quite good highlights. Although the wooden paneling on the far side never fails to just, yeah, it always just looks incongruous more than anything. Like, it just feels like you're pitching up somewhere. But
I've only been to Annan once. Last season when I completed the 42, I kind of left Annan to the end. Because I knew it was a good away day. I wanted to leave one of the better trips for last, I suppose. And I went to the gents, and an entire medical facility was just in the middle of the toilets. So like the bench that you would bring out, like somebody who was really injured was in the middle, and then all of their their oxygen tanks were just sitting there. And I was like, it seems a strange place to put it. But then maybe that's they don't have a lot of cupboard space at Annan. I don't know.
I think there's definitely a thing around. There's probably an Instagram account there of lower league grounds and incongruous storage. Because as you were saying, the couple of weeks ago I was down at Somerset, and you walked through the turnstile and you were greeted by one of those not stretchers, are they? Like treatment tables. That's what they're called.
Yes.
But you're just like, why is this here? Like, this is absolutely nowhere near anything else.
You should, I don't know about SPFL grounds, but referee changing facilities are often very interesting. I did a few junior games down in Ayrshire, and one of the times it was like you were in the corner of the canteen with like a curtain to pull round, and this wee tiny bit in the corner, and then you had to go like across the road into a shower if you wanted a shower after the game. And I was just like, by the time I thought of that, I'm like, no, I'll just drive home and get one when I get home. It's like I understand the space concerns, but it's like you've got to prioritise what the stadium actually does exist for, and having medical facilities seems somewhat important. Yeah.
Having said that, I saw some footage from one of the Rugby League, Super League games last weekend where the guy from Sky Sports was interviewing the players as they appear to be walking through a pub's car park on the way. So they've clearly got a training ground where they get changed before the game. And then the live, as part of the build-up, was them walking through a pub and like some grassy area. And I was just like, oh, well, at least it's not just Scottish football that's got this sort of awkwardness and less slickness than some places.
I'll bring this back on on topic somewhat, which is Annan. I saw them earlier in the season. I was at the Scottish Cup game when they lost to Pollock and wasn't impressed by them at all. And always amazed by Aidan Smith, isn't it? The centre forward, that a very unusual looking man. But the
most hillbilliest man in Scottish football.
I just assumed because Tommy Goss scores a lot of headers. I spent the first sort of half hour assuming this was Tommy Goss because he kind of sounds like he'll be a big man. And then I was like, no, this is Aidan Smith. But Annan have obviously kind of turned it around because he didn't have the best start to the season in general. But they're sitting in third now. Do you think they look to me like they're maybe one of the most likely to pull away, or do you not think so?
So, well, I don't want to speak for Sean, but it's last night's result between Albion Rovers absolutely battering Elgin now means that there's, you know, you've got 7 points now between Annan in third and Albion Rovers in ninth, which is just
seven points by my reckoning.
Yeah, 7 points. Yeah, so like it feels like it's just going to depend kind of on who's got that momentum, I suppose, in the last few games of the season. Going and then the playoff becomes a bit of a crapshoot because you're kind of hoping that Clyde are just going to be abject.
I think you're right in terms of how it works out. What I would say is I think we are. Telfer mentioned this actually a week or two ago in terms of, yes, we've mentioned League Two being unusual in terms of Annan and Forfar were both expected to challenge it at the top end of the table. For a good chunk of this season, they were actually down the opposite end. However, Annan are now third, Forfar are kind of bubbling under the top four spots.
And that's where Stirling go to this weekend as well.
Aye. I mean, let's face it, the top two spots are probably nailed down. In what order? Not entirely sure. I would expect 1, 2, and 3 to be, well, Dumbarton and Stirling in some semblance of order. Annan to finish third. I do think fourth spot is open. And whether it's Annan, I think Annan's got a good squad. I think how they performed on Saturday, even though Stirling had their goalkeeper sent off in terms of Blair Curry, I thought they looked good. And I think there was a big surprise about how they started the season. Whoever gets to the final of the playoffs from League Two will win it. Like, I would be amazed if Clyde or Peterhead, whoever finished ninth, can beat Stirling Albion or Dumbarton or Annan or Forfar or Stenny or whoever else they face in the final. I would genuinely be amazed. Clyde and Peterhead, for my money, are two of the worst teams in the country at this moment in time for various reasons. So if Annan can get to the final of the playoffs, and that's probably as good as they can hope, then they've got a pretty decent chance, I think, of getting promoted, as would anybody from League Two who reaches the playoff final.
Yeah, I think it's the momentum feels like it's with Forfar a little bit now for that, but it's
to a degree. I think Forfar have, again, we spoke about Forfar at the start of the season, on paper they have an okay squad, not one of the best that they've had in recent years. I think they had a fairly terrible manager. They've replaced them with a good one in Ray McKinnon. If Forfar don't manage to get to playoffs this season, I would suggest that they will be very much one of the favourites to reach playoffs next season, because McKinnon is, for all his faults, and there's been some faults during his CV, I think he's a pretty decent manager. I wouldn't necessarily say the momentum was with Forfar. I would still have Stenny with more hopes of finishing fourth than Forfar.
Well, we'll see if Craig Telfer actually listens to podcasts he's not on. But a huge compliment you've just given them there. So have you got anything else you want to say about this match, or before we go up into League One?
Only the commentator's use of World Cup goals to describe good goals. Because not every goal in the World Cup is good. Like, there's some rubbish goals in the World Cup.
Quite often they're more rubbish than good.
Then I was... Then I was wondering if they were getting mixed up with, you know how like Sky Sports, like Paul Merson used to have that thing about describing things as a worldie. I was wondering if they were getting mixed up with that. Well, see, I doubt it.
I've heard people talking about trying to play like the World Cup pass quite a lot. I feel like that's a pretty common. My dad used to always, he would deride people for playing a World Cup pass when the easier pass was available, like trying to show off. And I wonder if there's a bit of a kind of bastardization of that as well going on. But that combination of those things, they would have graced very much the World Cup, though, those two goals. So
I mean, you're right, they were good. I particularly enjoyed the second one from Ross McGeechy and like Kieran Moore, as soon as it left his foot, like they probably curled it in from, I don't know, 22 yards. But Kieran Moore actually put his arms up to celebrate as soon as it left his boot. Like it was just a class goal.
I think the second Annan goal as well was well taken, but also had the vibes of like the last couple of minutes of five sides when like no one was trying. It felt like nobody really closed them down. Like he took that nice touch to the side and it just kind of bashed into the corner, and it felt like none of the defenders even kind of got anywhere near him, which is quite an odd thing to happen in like the 25th minute of the game or whenever it happened.
And the two commentators celebrated the referee immediately. Well done, referee. Well done, referee. Very good. They like, he played advantage. I totally get that. And you're right. It was almost like a feeling of, I think it was Goss that was brought down. I'm not 100%, but I think Goss was brought down. It almost felt like the Stirling Albion defence kind of stopped to a degree. Think maybe expecting a free kick. I don't know. That's not an excuse at all. But you're right. Everything was in slow motion at that point. It was a good finish, but everything was in slow motion.
The other thing was the red card itself, does it actually hit his hand? I wondered if it actually cannoned off his face.
Again, a disagreement with the Annan commentators. Somebody said, so I think the main commentator went, handball, red card. The co-commentator said, well, it hit his chest. I thought he handled it.
His hands definitely went up, but I wondered if it just sconed him in the face because he looked quite surprised at the card coming out. Did it have to be a red card? I don't know, because I don't know if the shot's going in. If it's going wide, it's probably not a red card. But nonetheless, that's the referee's judgment. But I couldn't decide if it did actually hit his hand, because clearly if it didn't hit his hand, it certainly shouldn't have been a red card. I think we can agree on that.
Right, well, let's go to League One, where there was an absolute humdinger at Lincs Park, where Montrose got a stoppage time equaliser to take a point against FC Edinburgh. Goals in the 4th and 94th minute in this game from Montrose, with Edinburgh taking the lead two times after that. Craig, you said that you're been a massive fan of watching League One and thinking it looks much better than the Championship. Was this the sort of game you're talking about?
Yeah, Montrose. I quite like Petrie. I like the way he coaches his teams. I've watched Falkirk a couple of times this season, like what they do in Edinburgh. I've not seen them before, but from these highlights, they're trying to play a bit, and it's kind of like it's a mixture of playing football, but also not being stupid and taking overly tippy tappy, as many dads around the country would say. But there's just something more of a refinement to League One without the kind of desperation that I think you maybe start to get in the Championship. But having said that, and talking about the attacking quality that I was on show, there was some nice passing, all the rest of it. You've seen him obviously in the flesh a few times. Aaron Lennox did not cover himself in glory in this match with at least two of the goals. Looking at Sean's face there, he very much spilled two efforts that I think he should have held, which led to I think the second and third Edinburgh goals. And he basically got bailed out by two of his teammates bulleting in from set pieces. That would have been a pretty bitter blow, I think, to Montrose to lose that game, because it looked like they put enough into it to get something out of it and nearly didn't.
What I would say about Montrose is that Stuart Petrie deserves a huge amount of praise in terms of where Montrose were when he took them over and where they are now. And bear in mind, for the last couple, what, two, three seasons now, they've been a team who have made the playoffs, I think, or, mm-hmm. or certainly been there in or around the playoff situation. I think in terms of this season, they've regressed a wee bit, and I'm not entirely sure he has solved the issues that have probably held them back all the years that they've been in League One. So they've always had a tight defence. They've generally coped okay in terms of at the back. Well, I say that in terms of a back four. But I don't think they've had a particularly good goalkeeper in terms of League One, and I don't think they've had a goal scorer in terms of League One, even though they've had Graham Webster, who has been, you know, scored a reasonable amount of goals for them. Blair Lyons has scored a reasonable amount of goals for them. I don't think they necessarily had that kind of forward player who can lead the line and hold the ball up and whatever. At the back, yes, they've probably had like a decent back four, but never a kind of decent goalkeeper. And to a degree, they had that this season with Ross Sinclair, who they had on loan, who was with St Johnstone, off the top of my head. He's went back. Now Ross Sinclair is a good goalkeeper, and I think he will go on to have a good career at a decent level. But you could see it at this Edinburgh game. Aaron Lennox, God bless him. I quite like him. However, he was at fault for two of these goals, and they've tried to solve the problems up front by bringing in Rory McAllister. Now, of course, Rory McAllister is a legendary lower league goal scorer. He's now 35. Yes, he had a good season last season at this level, but whether he is the man this season, I'm not entirely sure. He had a really good bit of beef with Robbie Much in this game.
It was ongoing as well. I liked it. It was like the highlights package really kind of built it up. It was kind of like a promo in the wrestling. Like, they kind of were showing you all the wee incidents that led up to them getting involved. And then right after the goal, he was giving him a pat in the back and a wee shove.
But it kind of feels like, there's been two glaring omissions at Montrose now for 3 or 4 years, up front and goalkeeper. Now, they've tried to solve it with loan signings or bringing in McAllister when he's 35. Fine. But if you can't fix these issues when the rest of your team, who you've been reliant on down the years, is getting older and older and older, then there's a bit of an issue. And they're obviously not in the same position as somebody like Arbroath, who we'll probably talk about in the Patreon. However, like Sean Dillon's 39, McAllister's 35, Paul Watson's 37, Michael Gardine's 37, Terry Masson might be kind of mid-30s. Now, not all of those players played at the weekend, but there's still a feeling that there has to be, like, eventually this team is going to become too old.
Mm.
So if you can't fix that, well, you still can't fix the glaring omissions up front and in goals, then you're obviously going to go backwards. And it kind of feels like this is the start of Montrose starting to go backwards. And they could still finish fourth. I'm not saying that's impossible. I wouldn't expect it, though. And it feels like Petrie has a bit of a job in his hands in terms of how he rejuvenates a squad, because I feel like there's a big job on in the not-too-distant future.
And I think it goes without saying that that Petrie is a really highly rated manager by anyone that's kind of followed Montrose last few years, and the fact that we're even talking about them, contemplating them for playoffs is testament to what he's done over the years. But yeah, you're right that that all managers have a shelf life, and there are very few managers that are good at regenerating squads. That's a specific skill that very few managers do have. And then so you do start to wonder and be like, you know, it's not the unthinkable, but at what point, does Stuart Petrie start regretting not taking those job offers that he's been linked with in the past and stuff like that? Or maybe he just doesn't, because we know that he's relatively settled in terms of what he does elsewhere. But it's a curious one.
I wouldn't expect Stuart Petrie ever to take a full-time a full-time job in Scottish football.
Okay, yeah.
I think has a good job out with football. As far as I'm aware, he's involved with a bank, has a good job. I think he enjoys himself at Montrose. I think, listen, Montrose fans, like even if Montrose finished fifth or sixth this season, I suppose you would say, in the grand scheme of things, that is a good place for Montrose to finish. However, it just feels like they're starting to regress. And hopefully, because other than the fact that Montrose play really weird noises when they score goals, I like Montrose Football Club. So hopefully he can rejuvenate. But it feels like this is a season, maybe not quite too far, but this is there's a few players in this squad that this is their limit. So how does he replace them? Because they've been key for a number of seasons now. So it will be interesting to see how they progress from here.
And so looking at League One table, we're going to assume that it's one of Dunfermline or Falkirk to win league. Probably Dunfermline, we would say. That would put Falkirk, and then are Edinburgh City going to be one of those other three in the playoffs? Is it just going to be too much for Montrose? In your opinion, Sean?
In terms of... Right, so I think it'll be... So Dunfermline and Falkirk will definitely finish top two.
One and two, yeah.
I think Airdrie will finish third, and I wouldn't be surprised if neither Montrose or Edinburgh finish fourth. I wouldn't be surprised if Alloa make it into that position. In terms of Saturday... I thought you could kind of see why both teams are doing well and why they're doing poorly. Like Edinburgh have the core of a starting 11, but like quite a good starting 11. After that, you're kind of struggling a wee bit with Edinburgh City. Like I really like John Robertson up front reminds me of, and I've said this before, he reminds me of John Beard. Like he's small, he's squat, he scores goals, he is an absolute nuisance. Do I expect to see him in the Premiership? No. Do I expect to see him at a team higher up in the SPFL pyramid? Yes, absolutely. I really like him. I quite like Stephen Warnock at the weekend, who's on loan for Kelly. I thought he looked pretty good. I don't know how Kelly fans rate him, but I thought he looked like he was a good acquisition for Edinburgh. And Other than about that, they have a decent starting 11, but it kind of feels like they have backward momentum, if that's a thing, and I wouldn't be surprised if they end up finishing fifth or sixth.
I think Warnock's like the latest sort of player who our fans think is 10 times better than he is because he isn't playing. Obviously, he had to spell it Forfar, was that? And yeah, that would have been in League 2 last season. He was on loan there. And then he's obviously, so it's kind of that incremental thing. He's played a handful of games for the first team as a substitute. I think he played in that game where the first team squad had COVID and we still had to play Dunfermline in the League Cup. He played, that's the only time he started for us, I think. And we've seen him, my feeling from him in general is that he's a good creative player, but he maybe just needs to toughen up a bit. And that's what these loan dispels will maybe do for him. But there's a big gap.
Only 19.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's a big gap between looking good in League One.
Of course.
I didn't get the impression exactly stood out for Forfar last season. I think he looked all right. I'm certainly not surprised not to see him in the first team this season at Kelly, but I think it's that thing, if Kelly were doing even half well, no one would be worried about him, but suddenly it's like, oh, why is he going out on loan and all the rest of it. And maybe it's hard to tell. Maybe he would have contributed something, maybe he wouldn't. But yeah, I think... for young players, getting games is the only thing that can happen. And I think having played the season, playing the competitive level and playing for a team who are chasing something should stand them in good stead. And you're the same with that Edinburgh squad. Like I'm somewhat knowledgeable in the sense of knowing who the players are and going through it. And I always look through the teams kind of on a Saturday. And Edinburgh is one of the squads where you always recognise like a good 10, 11 of the guys. But then you start going and you're like, okay, you'll be the kind of East of Scotland League kind of make weights, the ones that are just making up the numbers. And it does feel like a club who maybe use a large bit of their budget on their kind of marquee players and then kind of just yeah. scraps. And I know that that's a few clubs in the lower leagues. Whereas I think Montrose, it seems to me like try and spread it more evenly across the squad. And I don't know that either. I think they're maybe both slightly too far in the wrong directions. Because I think, as you say, Montrose have had surely opportunity to attract a pretty good forward and maybe sacrifice a couple other wages, and it feels like they haven't done that.
I think Edinburgh, probably the proximity to so many other clubs, I think makes them have a better use of the loan market. I think it feels more appealing, I think, to other clubs. But again, I think Hibs lent them three players, and all three were back at East Road by January. So it does, you know, that I think they're also quite quick at working out if a player's going to work for them or not. And I suppose that's always the issue with loan signs. Is it's a two-way agreement, isn't it? Almost three, actually. You've got the club that's getting the player, you've got the player itself, and then you've got the parent club. And so there's dangers of doing too well or not playing at all. And I think that was certainly the case with a lot of Hibs loanies, but that is a risky strategy, as you said, for Edinburgh to take, because you're relying on other clubs having talent, and those players want to come to you, which is not always the case.
And in fairness, we wrote them off last season, so I look forward to seeing them in next season's Championship.
Well, I think they should have. They've got Clyde this weekend at home. You would imagine that's three easy points, and
Clyde's Montrose. On a high. Clyde's on a high
after the first win in what? The first win in 280 odd days
since August.
Yes. And then Montrose go to the Indodrill. So that'll be quite interesting in terms of how it's going to shape out for the rest of League One. But final game that we're going to look at, as you pointed out when in our chat beforehand, Sean, let's talk about a subject we can all get behind. And I imagine this especially...
more so Craig Anderson.
Works for Craig Anderson. And it was A United being defeated, this time by Partick Thistle, Ian McCaulis, Partick Thistle, who defeated them 1-0 on Saturday at Somerset Park in front of just over 3,000 fans. Danny Mullen getting the goal after 32 minutes. What were your impressions? I'll go to you, Craig Anderson, first. I'm not asking for your impressions of Somerset Park, because I'm sure it will be less impolite. But what was your impressions of the game?
Yeah, well, I think to start with, like with Ayr, it's like I would be pretty keen for them to get promoted on the very, very specific scenario that we are still in the league. I am terrified of the scenario of them passing us on the way, or us having to play them in a playoff or anything of the sort. But I wouldn't mind them coming up, especially for the playoffs. I don't really want them to win a league, but not the championship.
Well, it spoils one if you're
no, they've won League One before. I think, yeah, they did. But yeah, so that's kind of what's going through my head at the moment. It's like and so it's a bit heartening to see them like slip up. I think they should comfortably make the playoffs, would be my guess. As for the game, this was certainly not a game, as I said earlier, that merited a 13-minute highlight package. it didn't really necessarily seem particularly high on quality. And this is, when you are battling at the top of the championship, I think it can become a bit like that. In my kind of experience, is that unless you are, you know, if you run away with a game, it can be different. But once you've got something to defend, it felt like every game just becomes the team that are getting beat kind of launching balls into the box against the team that are ahead. And that felt to me like what it was. And yeah, Thistle had kind of some opportunities, but it was like probably just about a deserved win for Thistle, I thought, but I would say that. But they weren't exactly like, you know, when you're talking about the run of form that they were coming off. I realised I'm descending into the darkness here. I just looked at myself again.
Really, you're really dark. You're really dark, Craig.
I will get a light on, and that will sort this out. the thing with Thistle is just the run of form that they were coming off, and the fact they had kind of passed or changed manager. Obviously played well at Ibrox, but got nothing out of it. They just needed a result, and they got a result. And I, with that run of form, had kind of assumed that they were close to being well out of it. I hadn't really glanced at the table to realise that. And then you look at the table and know they are very, very much still in that reckoning for the playoff places. They're obviously only a point behind Morton, only three behind there. And I think every year that battle for those playoff places in the Championship just kind of opens up. And the thing is, with the way that Dundee and Queen's Park are starting to falter, it's not inconceivable that Thistle could. They're only 8 points off the top. It's not inconceivable that if they string a run together, either of these teams, or probably even Rovers, maybe Rovers are maybe just a wee bit too far back, if they can string a run together, maybe win, like, you know.
Raith Rovers are 13 games unbeaten and still quite a good bit back.
10 points if you were to win. If you were to win, like,
I know, but we,
eight of your last 11 games.
I know, but we just draw. So that probably won't happen. But regardless, I enjoy your positivity.
There seems to be. I would be surprised if Inverness end up in the reckoning, but I think of those top six teams, I don't think the title is down to like two or three teams or anything of the sort. I feel like it's still pretty wide open. Clearly the ones that are up the top have still got it in their hands. But
that's what Lee Boone will be kicking themselves about with.
Yeah, absolutely.
The results as they unfolded on Friday night, you knew what was capable. You know that, and any sort of air win would have taken them second. And so even psychologically, that could have been a big moment. But having watched Ayr the week before really, you know, get outplayed by Elgin City, who, you know, last night fell to a 3-0 defeat by Albion Rovers, I wouldn't be confident about Ayr in the playoffs, because I think they are an entirely functional team. And then they have a pretty lethal striker up front who,
but he's misfiring a bit. Like he's not been scoring at the same rate.
Yeah,
he scored a double against Elgin, obviously, but that was an extra time. You're talking about league goals. He kind of raced away, and then the goals are not coming at the same rate. And they are cup. There's two cup wins that they've had are kind of masking a wee bit of a slide in the league for Ayr, I would say. I don't think the fans are that happy with Bullen. It's only two wins in seven in the league.
It's an attritional style, I would say, as well. It's not.
Ayr have been bad since October, essentially. They've not really been great since October. And I do wonder if that there is a. So in Scottish football, you play each team four times, right? Mm. Like, we all know that. And I do wonder if you are a manager who is inflexible, and I think Lee Boulin is. So if you're inflexible, by the time you get to the second half of a season, then surely other teams know how to play against you.
Unless you're Cove Rangers.
Well, I'm not so sure, but regardless.
But just that televised effort a couple of weeks ago, like Ayr ran riot, but that was, you know.
But that's because Cove Rangers are absolutely rancid.
Yeah.
However, in terms of Scottish football in general, if you are a manager who is inflexible and you play one way, then presumably, without knowing how football teams work, you know how to counter that by the time you've played them the second time or the third time. And I do think, bearing in mind that John McGlynn used to manage Raith Rovers, I kind of felt that was the case sometimes with McGlynn, when he would come up against teams and especially in the Championship, when they weren't the favourites, or they weren't a full-time team against a part-time team. And I think Boulin is starting to come into that position in the Championship. So I didn't think, at the start of the season, and as ever, I'm generally wrong, I didn't think Ayr had a particularly good squad, but I didn't know how the players that I didn't know would perform, and obviously, like Dipo Akinyemi has had a good season. However, within a quarter of a season or half a season, the other managers within that league know that Akinyemi is their best player. And we now know how Ayr are going to play. So in this game on Saturday against Partick Thistle, it was shelling the ball long to Akinyemi, and it wasn't coming off. And Partick Thistle were far and away the better team. And bear in mind, Partick Thistle haven't been great in the last few weeks, and I appreciate that's why Ian McCall has got his jaws. Chris Doolan is a very inexperienced manager. But based on Saturday, and bear in mind, I appreciate they hadn't signed Chris Maguire on Saturday, he looked poor. He looked really, really poor. And it's funny because I know all football fans are kind of bipolar online in terms of everything is either tremendous or terrible. I think Ayr United fans are, maybe it's just because there's more of them on Pine Bovril than some other Championship fans. I think Ayr United are particularly good or bad at that. I'm not entirely sure whether it's good or bad. But they were very much a case of, my goodness, we've been terrible for ages. Don't think we're at the playoffs. I mean, they're 5 points off the top with a game in hand. That doesn't seem that bad. Then I watched the highlights and I was like, my goodness, they're absolutely shit. but they looked really bad on Saturday.
With the Maguire addition, it's an interesting one in the sense that he was linked with Kelly a little bit. Obviously, we are in need of a forward. And what I heard from someone, I don't know how connected or not they are, was that he looked woefully unfit. He's obviously not played in a while because he had his gambling ban, I think, down south, which led to his contract kind of being terminated. I think it was at Lincoln they played with previously. Yep. And I really liked him when he played with Kelly, but we're talking, is that 2008? We're talking like 14, 15 years ago at this point. So I think he might well be a slightly different player in that period. But if it's obviously when you're in the Championship and you're attracting a Scotland international forward who has still been playing at a relatively high level in England, like there's obviously, it could be a really good signing, and he's definitely a kind of a
Craig, shithouse. Please say it. Please say the sentence that we all want to hear.
I'm not going to say it.
Please say it.
It could be a good player at that level.
Now we're talking.
But I think he's the one thing he brings is the kind of attitude. He's a kind of definitely noises people up. He likes to be, and we had a running battle with Hibernian zone Lee Johnson. During their time
that was funny.
In the Championship.
I'll give him
or League One even, but that attitude might be what they need. It's just someone else who's maybe bringing something a bit different.
So what I think he'll bring to I've kind of suggested that Lee Bullen doesn't have anything different to bring to the table. What he's now brought is a new player to bring to the table. And Akinyemi has been isolated for weeks, if not months. I think he will, if they want to play the two of them up front together, I think he will be the link man from midfield to Akinyemi. So the I suppose the position that Michael Moffat kind of brought to that team for a number of years, I think he could be a very, very, very good signing. However, I hope he plays. No, I'm just jealous because we play them on Friday night. So, like, don't make signings before we're just about to play you. It's very, very irritating. But we'll see. As I try to get out of Craig Anderson, this whole kind of could be a good signing for that level. A lot of the time it doesn't work out. We'll see how it goes with Maguire. In terms of Ayr, they might finish in the playoffs. They've got a great chance to get into the semi-finals of the Scottish Cup, so it could be a really, really good season for them. Based on what I've seen so far, they won't get promoted. They won't get promoted. It feels like they're running out of steam.
But do you fancy Thistle's chances if they make the playoff? Do you think... I mean, again, I suppose does Doolan get the job to the end of the season? You know, there's a huge adjustment going on off the field at Thistle.
Adjusting some contracts anyway.
Well, and that's one of the things, the remarkable story that came out yesterday, that they, by all counts, if you listen to stuff that Alan Rufford said, that they'd... they've budgeted this season. I think that was one of the reasons why McCall got his jotters, was that, you know, the budget was set that Partick Thistle would finish second, which is ambitious. I would say, you know, it seems a bit, I think it doesn't take a lot not for that not to happen, put it that way. So they would be in the playoffs regardless, and yet all the player contracts are set to expire before the end of the Premiership playoffs, which not ideal.
However, generally that is the case, but that isn't the case this season, to be fair.
No, yeah, I think it's an admin oversight. I don't think it's anything deliberate, but you would hope that given that Partick Thistle the previous board spent a lot of time telling fans that they weren't professional and competent enough to run the club, that you have a practice or a qualified lawyer as your CEO, you would maybe notice that level of detail if you were setting, who I imagine Jerry Britton did have something to do with setting the budget as well. But I don't know how football clubs run. It just seems that would be the case.
I would like to see something happen that means that the contracts can't be updated, and then we get to the playoff final and no matter who they're playing, it doesn't matter if they're playing against us, they then have to like field only the players who are like under contract, like whether that's like 15-year-olds and all the rest of it. But just
are they not allowed to sign? They would not be allowed to sign amateurs.
Well, maybe they could get the old amateurs in. But the thing with Thistle for me always is I look at that squad and I think that is a good Championship squad. Like I thought that last season, I was a bit worried about them last season. They didn't quite have enough. They just ran out of steam, to be honest, with the pitch issues. I felt like they were probably not far off Kelly in terms of how good they were. Arbroath were better than Kelly. We just somehow managed to win the league anyway. but they were not far off us. But they strengthened a bit. They maybe lost a couple of players. I think losing Rudden when they did last year was a blow to them, regardless of how well he's done elsewhere. He was a big part of that team. But they do have depth as well. Like you look at who came on. Obviously, they lose Anton Dowds early in this game. Mullen is able to come on, a player who I really like and who obviously scored the goal. They've got guys like McKinnon, who I quite like the look of. Every time I see him, he's maybe, you know, bit part kind of thing. And then they've got guys that have done it as well, and that to me is I think they would be a threat if they got into the playoffs if they make the right managerial decision, but it depends who they can employ.
My hope is that they can get anybody to sign up for this new contract extension. They reach the playoffs and then everybody fucks off to, I don't know, Anton Dowd's Stag do or something, and they have to play playoffs. Have to play playoffs with under 21s.
It's like the Darvo all over again. But the that's the thing. It's interesting to know who got the job. It feels like they just give it to Archibald again. Will they just continue that recycle? I think it's a pretty attractive job. If the takeover kind of goes smoothly, they're in a good position in terms of the squad. They're in the Championship. They've got a chance of going up. I think they're a club I expect to see back in the Premiership in 4 or 5 years, definitely, maybe sooner. All of that makes it up to me and a pretty attractive job. So I wouldn't be surprised if they are able to get a good manager in, but it depends. I don't know finances.
John Hughes. You're laughing.
I know. You wouldn't wish him on your worst enemy, would you?
This is a board that makes curious decisions, John.
Well,
Hughes.
It's a new board now, so I suppose there's they've moved on, so maybe not. Maybe there's a era of competence and less antagonism. You would hope there'd be less antagonism towards your own fans if you're fan-owned, but that's not necessarily always the case. But we'll,
Duncan, that doesn't sound funny. I want a period. I want another period at Partick Thistle that involves humour. A point, John Hughes.
Right, I think that covers the three leagues. We're going to go and skip over to Patreon, where we're going to discuss the bottom end of the Championship, which is getting pretty interesting, and see who will end up in League One next season. But thank you very much for everyone that listens. Reminder that we've got a live show on Friday the 10th of March at Hampden Park in aid of Children First. I would thoroughly recommend getting your tickets for that. It's going to be a hoot. I can't believe I just said it's going to be a hoot. That's not a phrase I've ever said. But yes, thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, Craig. And I'm gone now. See you later on. Enjoy your football. Bye bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.